Hello, everyone. We better get going. Andy Cohen, take your seat. Thank you. Okay, I'm Estelle Pearson. I'm chairing the session just now on commercial insurance, when will the cycle turn? So presenting, we have Kevin Gomes and Tim Yip from Taylor Fry, who are both actuaries, and also Kevin is involved in producing the JP Morgan Taylor Fry publication on sort of where the insurance industry is at from a series of interviews with underwriters, reinsurers and brokers. So I guess I have some pretty good insights from doing that work on where the commercial cycle is and when will it turn. So I'm just going to hand over straight away.
Thanks, Estelle. So we will have a few insights from the barometer, and just by way of an initial disclaimer, which is we're still preparing our barometer for the current year, so it's in its sort of infancy in terms of the preparation. But we'll be showing some information on past barometers, certainly. So commercial insurance, when will the cycle turn? So just an outline of our talk and why we're doing it. So commercial insurance is a very important class of business. The size of premium is around about $11 billion and comprises about 30% of the direct GWP for the insurance industry in Australia. It is very important, but it's performing poorly. So in 2015, a combination of high loss ratios, low investment yields and high expense ratios resulted in the lowest ROE for commercial insurance in the last 30 to 40 years. Yet, our barometer study shows that insurers back in 2015 said that they were mostly predicting falls in rates coming off the lowest ROE. So what is causing this seemingly irrational behaviour, and what and when will the cycle turn? So what we'll be covering today is providing some information on where we feel we are at the moment through the cycle. We'll be focusing on the Australian experience. There's been some regulatory focus on commercial insurance, and we'll be covering that. And we'll be giving an overview of the US experience, which we feel is also relevant to the prediction of where the cycle will turn in Australia, as we see the cycle as a global cycle, not just a local one. We'll give you an overview of some of the qualitative discussion of the drivers from a qualitative point of view, and then we've also done some quantitative modelling of the cycle, which hopefully we can use to give you some insights on when the cycle will turn. And then we'll gaze into our crystal balls and look at where we go to from here. Okay, so just by way of a little bit of a disclaimer in terms of our own qualifications to do this talk. So we don't profess to be experts, and we don't work at the coalface in terms of pricing of commercial insurance. But in order to prepare for this talk, what we did is we went out and talked to plenty of people who are practitioners, both here and overseas. And we did plenty of reading, and what our literature search uncovered is that the insurance cycle, there's plenty of literature that's written about it. In fact, we found papers on this dating back to the 1960s and the 1970s on the insurance cycle. So clearly this is not something new. Although it is an age-old problem, the commercial cycle and when it will turn, It is still confounding us today. Insurers nominate the commercial insurance cycle at the moment. Through our barometer study, they nominate the cycle as one of the top two or three issues that are confronting the industry today. And as I mentioned before, APRA has noticed the poor state in terms of the commercial insurance profitability, and it is reacted by asking some serious questions of insurers, and we'll cover that. So let's start off by just looking at what the recent Australian experience has been in terms of commercial insurances. So we start here by looking at some of the short-tailed lines, the property classes. So we see here commercial motor and fire and ISR. And just a note here, so we're showing here average premium, which is the blue line, and the green bars are the loss ratios. But we're showing here net loss ratios, so it's not it's dampened the impact of CAT experience. And everything you see here is also seasonally adjusted because it's quarterly data, but we didn't want the seasonality to really impact because we're trying to look more at cyclical behaviour. Okay, so what you'll see is that both commercial motor and fire and ISR really had poor loss ratios in 2011 and 2015. So, I mean, that is partly CAT related, and even though we're showing net loss ratios, there will still be some CAT effects coming through there. So it is partly CAT related. But you will see that the average premium really for both is on a downward trend, and the reason we don't have quite as much average premium data, this is all sourced from APRA, the average premium unfortunately doesn't go back any further than that. But you'll see there is a bit of a downward trend on the average premium for both. There was a little bit of a spike up for the commercial motor just in the most recent period, and that's June 2016. But interestingly, I mean, it doesn't seem to have had any real effect on the loss ratio, so that's still very high. So what I would say here is it's apparent there is some cyclicality really in both of these property classes, commercial motor and fire and ISR, and it's pretty evident as well that we're at a soft part of the cycle for both. So if we look now at some of the longer-tailed commercial classes, so we see here public and product liability and professional indemnity. The cyclical impact really here for these longer-tailed classes is not as clear. The loss ratios for both are relatively high but volatile, and that's even without the impact of CATs that we see on the property classes. Some of the loss ratio volatility really is artificial in the sense that it would be affected by prior period reserve releases. I mean, so no doubt that is impacting and making both these classes look a bit more volatile. The average premium for product and public liability is fairly flat. You'll see, and professional indemnity, it looks to be on a slight downward trend. Okay, and we finish off by looking at employers' liability or workers' comp. It's pretty volatile in terms of the loss ratio experience, and I suspect it's also affected in that regard by prior period reserve releases. The average premium is also volatile, and there's no real clear evidence of an upward or downward trend. So just to conclude, in terms of the recent experience at least, the property classes do appear to be more cyclical than the casualty classes. But viewed in total, the current average premium and loss ratio experience is pretty unfavourable, and it's consistent with a soft market. So this provides you a view of what the longer-term experience looks like. So this goes back to 1993. It's sourced from our barometer study. And what it shows is a rate index just for one of the classes that we looked at, which is fire and ISR, or sometimes known as commercial property. And what you'll see is that there's clear evidence of cyclicality in terms of the longer-term experience. Just a note here in terms of the difference between the rate index that we're showing here. This is the rate index we sourced from the barometer and the average premium that I was showing on previous slides. So the average premium being sourced from APRA. So the average premium could be affected by inflation in terms of sums insured, but this rate index really is not showing that. So it provides really a clearer view of cyclicality without being affected by inflationary impacts. So the average premium So the average duration of the cycle from this looks, and measured from the time between a peak to a trough, looks to be about 4 or 5 years. And what I've pointed out here on this chart as well is just the mark to the point where there was the collapse of HIH, so around 2001. So I think what you'll see from that is that that had a fair impact in terms of allowing an accelerated growth in terms of that rate index beyond that point. I mean, the industry was already on an upward trend before that collapse, but there was an acceleration. And it appears to have put a bit of a floor as well in terms of how far rates can come down post that period. So really some evidence of, I guess, more rational pricing post the HIH collapse. So I'll just touch on the regulatory focus. And there's been a few things happening here. Going back to 2015, APRA conducted a thematic review on commercial insurance. And they sought information from insurers on how boards and senior management are assuring themselves of the adequacy of the risk management framework on commercial pricing. And then the findings from that review were published in APRA Insights during September 16. And the findings found, whilst APRA noted that the oversight and control of commercial property pricing was effective overall, but it really was found to vary by insurer. And APRA identified a number of best practices, which we just will touch on later in this presentation. Finally, we had a speech from Jeff Summerhayes at the Reinsurance Rendezvous, whereby he noted that in terms of the state of play on commercial insurance pricing, APRA was still very concerned, and whilst they're leaving it up to the industry for now to really improve their practices in this area, that they are willing to dial up the supervisory intensity if needed. So a bit of a warning on that. Okay, I'll hand over to Tim now.
Right, thanks, Kevin. So one of the limitations of looking purely at Australian data is the lack of a deep enough history. For the purposes of this presentation, we only managed to put together a consistent history that went back to 2005. So to supplement developing an understanding of the drivers of the insurance cycle, we decided to have a look at American data, where a much deeper history is available. So this slide details historical commercial insurance rate changes in the US, sourced from a market survey performed by the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers, as well as historical surplus capital levels sourced from the Insurance Information Institute. So firstly, there's a few observations that we can draw from the rate changes chart. So the first concerns how risk size can cause differences in cyclicality. So the chart to the very left shows historical rate changes split by account size. The darker the color of the line, the smaller the account. And it can be seen that although the rate change cycle turns at the same point for all account sizes, the larger accounts have a much higher amplitude. And it's pretty evident here and there. And Kevin will detail some potential reasons for this later on. But it's an interesting observation to think about, especially in relation to what this may mean for commercial property in particular. Additionally, it can be seen in this chart that the American commercial market, as at the second quarter of 2016, not sure if you can read that, but yeah, that says 2Q16. So it seems that the American commercial market is in the middle of the soft portion of the cycle. Now, subsequent to the collation of this presentation, the CIAB released third quarter survey results, which indicated that the rate change cycle has actually begun to turn. All right, let's now have a look at the chart that illustrates surplus capital levels. So there's two real notable features in this chart. We see a fairly sharp dip in the surplus from around 2007 to 2009, which reflects the impact of the GFC, and another dip in surplus in 2011, which reflected a record level of catastrophic events worldwide. Now, these two dips also coincided with two step changes in the rate change history. here and there. And this suggests a link between capacity and rate changes. However, it's also worth thinking about the sources of changes in surplus levels. For example, a surplus decrease due to a cat event may be treated differently to a surplus decrease resulting from business as usual underwriting losses. All right, so on this slide, the charts here overlay US commercial property loss experience and rate changes with that of Australia. And I guess it should be noted here that, as discussed before, there's a limited amount of Australian data on loss experience compared to the US. So yeah, we only really managed to get sort of from 2005 onwards on a consistent basis, whereas in the US, the Schedule P disclosures sort of pretty much go back all the way to 1980. However, for rate changes, we were actually able to source, I guess, a deeper history for rate changes from our barometer survey. And while cyclicality can be seen in both charts, it's much more easy to see in the rate change index chart. So although there's a bit in the loss ratio experience as well, it's a bit harder to see because of the distortion caused by cat events, particularly in Australia. And particularly, it can be seen in the loss ratio charts that we have a peak in 2011 in both US and Australia, which just reflects how bad 2011 was globally with respect to catastrophes. We have a peak restricted to Australia in 2015, when I guess you had catastrophes that were specific to Australia. It's also evident in the chart that there's a rough association in the rate change cycle between Australia and the US. So the cycles seem to turn at roughly similar times. So an exception to this can be seen, I guess, in the earlier part of the data series, around 2001 to around 2008. And a possible explanation for this may be the impact of the HIH collapse and its subsequent effects on market sentiment. All right, in this slide, I'd just like to make some broad qualitative conjectures as to possible drivers of the soft portion of the cycle, as well as some general comments on cyclicality and commercial classes. So there's currently a lot of surplus capital floating around globally hunting for yield. We've observed sharp increases in capacity in both direct and reinsurance markets. In particular, there's been a lot of attention lately on foreign capital flowing into Australia. The most notable example would be Berkshire Hathaway's recent involvement with IAG and Covermore. This high capacity makes it easier for insurers to support the underwriting of risks below technical break-even levels. Another driver is insurers focused on protecting market share. Insurers may price at below technical rates to maintain share. And this is an issue that's most notable in commercial classes due to the intermediary-driven nature of distribution. So not all commercial products are equally susceptible to the cycle. Commercial property is particularly susceptible. From conversations with a London-based practitioner with experience in this area, most of the volatility in commercial property rates can be explained by cyclical effects, with swings of up to 15% not unheard of, whereas this is much less so for casualty classes. More generally speaking, commercial insurance tend to be more prone to cycles compared to personal lines, and there's two real reasons for this. So commercial classes generally exhibit a lower claim frequency compared to personal lines, which introduces a greater level of pricing uncertainty. There are also much lower barriers to entry for commercial classes, whereas underwriting personal lines that are distributed directly to customers requires a significant amount of time to set up a brand and establish a reputation. Most commercial lines are placed through an intermediary, and all that is required to enter the market is sufficient capital and a good relationship with a local broker. This makes it easier for capital to flow in and out of commercial lines compared to personal lines. So up to now, we've restricted our investigation of the drivers of the insurance cycle to either general reasoning or an examination of historical data. To supplement this, we've looked at how we might use quantitative modelling to derive further insight into the drivers of the insurance cycle. We've conducted a literature review of insurance cycle modelling. Most of the literature covers non-Australian markets, in particular the American market. Given time limitations, we've omitted full detail of the review from this presentation, and we restrict ourselves to discussing the models formulated in one particular paper that we've adapted for this presentation. So on this slide, we have regression models that focus on explaining the insurance cycle in the US from 1953 to 1976. So firstly, given how old this particular model is, we've refitted these models to recent American commercial property data to see if they still give useful insights into the insurance cycle like they once did. Given the associations between the US and Australian insurance cycle, as discussed previously, it stands to reason that these models would be equally applicable to the Australian commercial property market. We then fit these models to the Australian data and observe what emerges. So these models focus on modelling the net loss ratios as a function of current and prior year rate changes, cost changes as defined by changes in the implicit GDP deflator, changes in investment income, and changes in surplus capital. We fitted all three models to both American and Australian data, and in both cases, Model 2 looked to give the most appropriate fit. While Model 1 provided the best statistical fit, it seemed to over-respond to catastrophes, which we don't consider to be part of the insurance cycle. This was particularly the case for the Australian fit. Model 2 was more robust to these events and provided a fit that looked to be more reflective of the underlying cycle. Model 3 provided a similar fit to Model 2, but at the cost of an additional parameter. So here are the results from the fit to the American data, with the left side showing the historical fit against actual net loss ratios, and the right side showing the relative importance of the four predictors. Regarding the right side, a steeper slope indicates a higher relative level of significance, with a positive slope indicating that a positive change in that predictor is associated with an increase in a loss ratio, all else held equal and vice versa. And there's two key insights to gain here. The first is that the coefficients relating to the current and prior year rate changes are opposite in sign, with the slope associated with the current year rate change, shown in the top left pane, being positive. This has the initially counterintuitive effect of suggesting that an increase in current year rates is associated with an increase in the loss ratio. The explanation of this is that rate changes are based on written rather than earned premium. To illustrate this, the prior year rate change slope, shown here, has the expected negative slope. This lag between implementation of a rate change and when premiums are earned may be a partial explanation of the cyclicality in the loss ratio. The second interesting insight to be gained here is the effect of investment returns on the loss ratio, shown in the bottom right-hand pane here. While it is one of the less significant predictors, it is on the borderline and suggests that increased investment returns are associated with decreased loss ratios. This is contrary to what you would expect from general reasoning. You'd think that insurers would be more willing to underwrite losing business if they expected higher investment returns. And the explanation here might lie in expectations. It is possible that the way that we have factored in investment returns in this model may not capture these expectations appropriately. So the results from the Australian fit are shown here. And we see a similar pattern emerging with respect to the slopes attaching to the current and prior year rate changes, showing a lag between when rates are changed and when it is earned and shows up in the loss ratio. The key difference between the results from the Australian and the American fit is that the lagged effect is stronger. That is, if rates rise this year, we can expect the loss ratio to fall more next year than it will rise this year. An interesting feature, however, is the flatness of the slope attaching to the investment return component, shown here. This may be reflective of different investment opportunities available to American insurers and or differing capital standards applying in the US. Given these results, while anecdotally one might think that the insurance cycle is affected by factors such as capacity, investment returns, and rate changes, these models indicate that the workings of the insurance cycle are driven principally by the industry's reaction to past experience and price level changes. So where to from here? The models discussed previously provide a framework in assessing market reactions to industry outlooks on claim experience. By developing scenarios that reflect industry outlooks on future claims experience, we can back-solve these scenarios for future rate changes, thereby translating an industry outlook to a potential market reaction. To illustrate, we've developed three scenarios that reflect the predicted market response to three different loss ratio outlooks. Scenario 1 reflects an outlook where loss ratios are believed to have peaked and will decline over the next 2 years. Scenario 2 reflects an outlook where loss ratios are expected to remain at levels similar to that seen recently over the next 2 years. And Scenario 3 reflects an outlook where loss ratios are expected to further deteriorate over the next 2 years. Back solving for these three scenarios, the model predicts three market responses. If there's an expectation that loss ratios have peaked and experience will improve over the next 2 years, the sustainability of current rates will improve, but insurers will keep rates more or less the same to avoid losing market share. If there's an expectation that loss ratios will continue at levels similar to that seen recently, then insurers will start putting through rate increases, as current loss ratios are well above the long-term average for this class and potentially unsustainable. In the extreme, if there's an expectation that loss ratios will deteriorate to levels worse than that seen recently, then insurers will correspondingly push rates up significantly. From what we've heard anecdotally, combined with the observation that the rate change cycle has turned in the US, as well as some early results from this year's Barometer Insurance Survey, it seems that Scenario 1 is the most likely one. So I'll now hand back to Kevin, who will talk about best practice pricing frameworks and the role of the actuary in commercial pricing.
Thanks, Tim. So I want to go talk in a little bit more detail about findings from APRA's thematic review and what their outline of best practice was. And the reason for this, I think it has implications certainly for insurers in terms of best practice on commercial pricing, but I think it also has implications for actuaries, and it could also have implications for the cycle, and I'll explain more on that as we go. So here's just a summary of some of the best practice findings from APRA, and they did it in a number of areas. And so looking at performance and reporting, really what they're saying is that insurers should have a clear understanding of cross subsidies. They should report on rate strength. There should be clearly defined risk appetite, and they should know where the portfolio is underperforming. In the area of strategy, the strategy should be properly formulated, clearly articulated, and understood within the organisation. From a governance perspective, they're saying that their technical pricing should be undertaken at least annually. It should align with business plan considerations. And where there are price discounts in excess of a predetermined percentage, these should be reported through to senior management. And from a product pricing change management perspective, there should be consideration of changes in terms and conditions. These need to be viewed together with the pricing decision. So sometimes these changes in terms and conditions can be a bit lost with the focus just on the overall price. Actual rates should be monitored against technical rates. So really, in terms of the role of actuaries, I think there's a lot there to be that's encouraging for actuaries. And so actuaries in the area of commercial insurance pricing they've been traditionally less prominent than in terms of the role they've played. They've always played a very active role on the personal insurance pricing side. But looking through APRA's catalogue of best practice, there's a lot there that really is relates very much to the actuarial role. And I've just highlighted a few of these here in terms of the board, the regular reporting to the board on pricing risk and pricing risk appetite, cross-subsidisation, regular reporting on price, rate strength, and so on. So what does all this mean in terms of the role of the actuaries, and why is it relevant to the insurance cycle? So what I'm showing here is a pictorial of showing you that where traditionally insurers actuaries have played in terms of the role that they played on commercial insurance pricing and where it may go to. So the role of actuaries has tended, it's always been larger in terms of at the small end of the risk market, and smaller at the large end of the risk market. And the way this pictorial reads, it shows that actuaries are locked in a bit of a battle of sorts with underwriters in terms of the influence that they wield on the prices. So there's more influence wielded by actuaries at the small end, but at the large end, it's really the underwriters who are wielding the most influence. But if we look at where things are heading over time, it's really that, and it's mainly at the small end, that there's a push to increase actuarial involvement at that small end, so it'll push it up. At the large end, that's kind of much the same, where it's more deferring to the influence of underwriters. So now, what does this mean in terms of actuaries, and why should it be relevant to the cycle? Well, what we saw from Tim's previous slide on the US market is that at the smaller end of the market, it's clearly been less cyclical than at the larger end of the market. So this being the area where actuaries have been more prominent, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think the actuaries have been a positive influence in terms of reducing cyclicality at that smaller end of the market. So I'm reminded also of Estelle's presentation yesterday where she noted that, I think it was post-2002, Estelle, that since the appointed actuaries her role has been created, the ROE for insurers was higher than in preceding periods. So I think whilst I've got a bit of a vested interest in this, I feel that actuaries do have a positive role to play. And as we move towards a greater influence for actuaries at that smaller end that of the market, that could indeed diminish future cycles. So I'll just finish off with our conclusions on this, the final word. So really, our analysis of recent Australian experience suggests that the commercial insurance market does continue to be soft. It's prompted regulator concerns, and there's a possibility of increased supervisory intensity. There are similar trends being observed in the US, and it confirms that global capacity is a key driver of the cycle. But our scenario modelling, it demonstrates the link between the loss ratio outlook and the insurer's price response. If insurers do believe that the outlook for loss ratios is positive, i.e. likely to decline, then they're likely to keep rates flat to down. Otherwise, rates could increase and possibly significantly. But we believe the most likely scenario is for the rate cycle to turn within the next year and loss ratios to improve in the absence of cats, of course. And finally, APRA's review of best practice commercial pricing approaches suggests actuaries do have a significant role to play, and we would contend that this could help diminish the cycle going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. So we've got time for a few questions. So if you can state your name, rank and serial number.
Robert Cameron from Chubb. I'm just interested in your modelling when you sort of said that you didn't believe there was any influence on the cats, and just noticing the data was certainly an uptick in post-2011 following the Brisbane floods and to a lesser extent, I guess, the New Zealand quake. Did you try at all to model the impact of cats to make sure that was in fact the case?
Yes, so I think, I guess, modelling cat events here was sort of beyond the scope of what we were trying to do. So we were really trying to see what really drives the underlying cycle. So I guess the cats just really distorted it quite a lot. So we found that, I guess, sort of by smoothing through the cats, I guess we sort of got a better picture of, I guess, the drivers.
So I think that the comments were made in terms of the influence of cats. From a general reasoning point of view, we think that insurers would look at cats certainly as something that does diminish their capital levels. But the question is that something that is an ongoing effect? If it is, then that would probably have an influence on the cycle, or is it a one-off effect, in which case they might look through that. Contrast that to something that affects capital levels, such as if there was a deterioration in capital levels which was seen as a sustainable deterioration, then they'd be more likely to build that in terms of a rate response. But your comments in terms of the Australian experience and the effect of the 2011 cats, there could very well have been an impact from those on the cycle.
Oh, Julie. And then John.
Thanks. Julie DeMarc from Liberty International Underwriters. You briefly mentioned cross-subsidies. Did you look at the impact of casualty reserve releases? Because obviously they've been cross-subsidising a lot of the commercial lines business for a number of years now. So we're now reaching the point where I guess those reserve releases are less likely to happen in future. So there's more need for increases in commercial property pricing. So did you look at that at all?
Yeah, you would have noticed most of our... sure if this is working. Most of our modelling and most of our talk was actually focused on the property classes. We did show some of the casualty stuff earlier on. You're quite right, though, that the impact of reserve releases, I think they are running out, and they've got implications for the pricing of those casualty classes going forward. We don't necessarily see that as a cyclical thing. In talking to practitioners and in terms of just our own view of the experience, we didn't see as much evidence of cycles on the casualty side. We're not saying it's not there, but it's just less pronounced than on the commercial side. But your comments are certainly correct that there will be implications as reserve releases run out for pricing.
Okay, we've got time, I think, for one more question. Thanks, John.
John Tucci, just one comment about the actuarial involvement and the relative involvement with smaller and larger. I don't think it's as simple as that. I come from a background where a lot of actuarial work was done on large risks, and it was quite clear-cut that there was advice around poor performance. It's just very difficult for a large business to be sort of given away. And it's around maintaining volume. And I think one of the key issues is around the relationship between brokers and underwriters. It's just not a real partnership in most cases. And there's just so much pressure to retain business. And that's what's driving a lot of the discounting.
I accept that. And when we spoke to practitioners, that's where the... that sort of conceptual idea of there being more influence at the lower end came to us very strongly in discussions with practitioners. And it's not that actuaries are not doing any work at the larger end. It's just that the volume of data at the larger end is less. So the ability to come up with definitive pricing in an actuarial sense was lower there. And therefore, there was more willingness to depart from that in terms of the actual rate set.
Okay, well, I think that we're out of time, so I just would like you all to join me in thanking Kevin and Tim for a very thorough and thoughtful presentation.